are rolling. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Cale Hawkins.
I'm Cameron Wilhite.
And how was your spring break, first of all?
My spring break was really good. I didn't do as much as I've heard other people did. Mm. But overall, it was just really nice to relax. Didn't have much work to do, which is really nice. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. How was yours?
Mine was, for the most part, very chill. But I did. I already told you this. I had a ER. I went to the ER and had surgery.
Yeah, yeah. You kind of threw that on me.
Yeah, it was a fun experience. I'm not gonna say what I had surgery for here because okay. we both know what it is. If anybody wants to know, they can ask me one on one, and maybe I'll tell them. Maybe I won't. Yeah. Overall, my spring break was chill. My mom and brother came and visited, so that was very fun.
Awesome. That's great.
Today is definitely different because we're getting like gut reaction of the film.
Gut reaction.
Because we just watched it.
Yeah. First movie that both of us have seen before.
That's true.
It's been a while for me. I think when I watched it, I was a freshman in high school. So it's been almost 5 years. Yeah. It's exciting. I forgot how much I liked it. So it was really, really good.
Yeah. And so jumping into it, today's film was Finding Neverland, yep. Starring Kate Winslet and Johnny Depp. Which you said before the film, you didn't know it was Johnny Depp, which was kind of funny.
Yeah, my sister told me yesterday. I was telling her about the podcast, and I was like, "We're watching Finding Neverland," and she's like, "Oh, with Johnny Depp." I'm like, "Johnny Depp's in it?" And so I checked the cast list, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, she's right."
Yeah.
So that was a funny realization.
Yeah, this movie is, it's so, yeah, youth spirited and like,
spoiler warning, by the way, spoiler warning.
Of course, spoiler warnings as usual, but as usual. Oh, it's so good. One thing my mom talked to me about before this, because this is her like go-to emotional film. She cries every time she watches this, and she doesn't usually cry when she watches movies.
I can understand why.
Yeah, but this is her go-to film. And one thing she said to me was she like did research when I told her I was gonna watch it, and to see if there's any evidence of him cheating on his wife. Because, you know, you watch the film and there's like speculation. It's very interesting to see that side and all, because even when I've watched it when I was younger, I never realized this side of like, oh, outward appearances, peer pressure, yep, societal norms, as well as having an affair, which, you know, the wife suspects Johnny Depp is having, and then you find out she's the one who had an affair. And it's very interesting to see.
Yeah, it is. It's a really interesting undertone in the movie, because in one sense it's so lively and spirited and it's really fun to watch. Kind of like if you guys watched Big Fish, then it kind of has a similar tone in a lot of ways. It's really imaginative. It makes you feel like a kid. It's super fun to watch. But then there's also this, like, once the kids are away, it's kind of like the grown-ups talk and things aren't nearly as fun. There's like speculations going on, like you said. There's that idea of, how do I look to other people? I mean, they even talk about that. Kate Winslet's mother, I don't even know what Kate Winslet's character's name is, but her mother in the movie is very upfront and forward with Johnny Depp, and she says, I don't want you hanging around with my daughter because there's rumors, and, you know, it's so hard for a widow to find a husband, especially if there's rumors that she's hanging around with a married man. And so, yeah, there's a lot of different themes and emotions that play throughout the movie, and a lot of it is fun and lively, but then the other half is sort of like
realistic and dark,
and much, I mean, they do it so well because it's so much more boring to watch those parts than it is to watch the parts with the kids.
Yeah,
because it's just so, it makes you feel like you want to go out, you want to play with them, just like Johnny Depp's character is doing. So
yeah, what's interesting though is like it visually showing that balance. It's kind of like Life of Walter Mitty. You like see in the mind of Johnny Depp's character of James, because, you know, when his wife and all, they go to two different doors and she opens hers and it's literally like completely dark. And then he opens his and you see this forest.
Yep.
And it's showing like he's always diving into his own world. It kind of shows that, for one, separation of their marriage, but also his imagination and how much like it's just growing and flourishing. Which is really cool to see, but also, again, sad, because he even says to her, like, I did try, and she's like, no, you didn't try. Like, you tried to, like, bring me along, doesn't mean you acknowledged me. It's sad to see, like, both parties at fault in this marriage, and them doubting each other, because she like goes through his book to see if he's having an affair, and like vice versa. He like, you know, goes to her and she's already gone and all this, and there's, you know, this lack of communication between them, which is so sad to see, because even though, again, from our perspective, it's like, oh, they never cared about each other to begin with, you can kind of feel like this history of them both trying, but they both tried at different times, and so that's why it never worked.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. It's so easy to put the blame on his wife as well, because she's not the main character. She's not the one that's having fun with the kids and creating all these fun stories, and so it's really easy to look at her and be like, well, she's the problem, right? But the truth is that both of them could definitely take steps in the right direction to make their marriage better, because there's clearly some miscommunication that's happening. There's clearly, you know, I mean, there's even the scene where she talks to him. She's like, the whole reason I fell in love with you is because, like, we dreamed of going on these adventures. Like, I dreamed of being in one of your stories. And, you know, like you said, he says, I tried. And it's like, you're Johnny Depp, bro. Like, you're this great playwriter. And he's doing all these things. You know, I'm sure he could have put in more of an effort. I'm sure she could have put in more of an effort. Like, it's easy to look at Johnny Depp and just be like, well, he's the main character. It's totally fine. But in reality, it's both of their fault. And that's more realistic.
It's kind of that struggling artist situation of, you know, like Tick, Tick, Boom, you know, there's the whole, spoiler alert again, but if you haven't seen Tick, Tick, Boom, what are you doing? there's that whole, if you're not,
I haven't.
Never mind then. But basically, it's just, you know, those moments of like, even other films, you can watch other films about artists, and it goes into how they, you know, very much struggle with balancing their personal life with their real life, and how their creative life very much takes over everything.
Mm.
And it very much can affect those close to them, because everyone close to them kind of thinks, you don't care about me, you just care about, you just care about your story, you just care about your music, your film, your play, whatever. And it's very sad to see, but, and it's also terrifying being CMA students. It's like, is that going to be me? Am I going to just become obsessed with this and fall out of touch?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't say a fine line, but there's a dangerous line between doing what we love, right? Like, we are film majors. I assume a lot of the people watching this are film majors as well. There's a difference between doing what we love and going really far out of our way to make something that's fantastic and we pour a lot of work into, and still separating those things from what we should do. I mean, not only as film Christians and people, film majors and Christians, and we have to separate the two, right? Like, it's, I don't know. In my mind, it's so easy to get wrapped up. I like creating all these fantastical worlds, thinking of all these great shots, all these things. Like, everywhere I go, like, I'll look at a building, I'll be like, that's some nice lighting or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, that's just what I do. But there's a difference between making that an obsession and like letting it affect the reality that we live through, right? And just like having it be, I mean, it can't just be a hobby, because it's what we do, right? Like, would be a job. But we do see that in the movie, where a lot of the problems, almost every argument that he and his wife have in the movie, come from the fact that he's spending too much time either writing, doing his play, or spending time with the Davies family. And the wife even says at one point, she's like, all I want, like, is for you to come home, like, to have dinner, like, to talk, you know, for once. And again, it's easy to put the blame on her. But then when we hear something like that, it's like, she makes a really good point. Like, he's really not doing that much to go out of his way to spend time with his wife, which is why I think rumors, like we were talking about, get started.
Yeah. And that's the interesting thing too, that's different from other like obsessions of their career, is his inspiration is from people and friends. The only issue is it's not his family. Mm. It's someone else's.
Yeah.
And that's where the speculations come in. But it's sad to see that, because you almost like wish, like, ah, oh, why didn't you two meet then? Like,
yeah.
Why couldn't we all have avoided this? Why couldn't Peter have avoided the heartbreak of losing a father by you two getting married? Why couldn't we avoid, you know, the divorce by you two not getting married instead, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But obviously that's all speculation and all, well, in theory, if that happened, you know, they wouldn't be, like, they wouldn't have kids, or they wouldn't have Peter or whatever. But you just like wish that, like, oh man, like everyone, it like met the wrong person, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's also not true in a sense, if you think about it, because Peter still loved his dad, and same thing with Mary. She still loved her husband.
Yeah.
But it is that painful, like, feeling. It's also interesting to see the side of peer pressure and societal norms because of the fact that, like, even today, you know, there's always that thing of, like, can, like, couples be friends with non-couples of the opposite sex and stuff and so on. There's always those, like, theories and discussions, as well as what is normal and what makes sense, which the whole play, you know, that's the debate. Like, this play is ridiculous. It's over the top. And it's like, really? Because everyone's laughing. But mm-hmm. the only reason they're laughing is because they're comfortable enough. That's yep. why they have the kids, which we'll get into in a minute. But sticking with the peer evaluation and relationship norms, what do you think?
I think, well, it's a hard question to answer.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a broad question, too.
Yeah. I think in kind of the same way that we touched on it before, like, I think it's like, it's okay to a certain extent. Like, we see in the movie, he's spending almost all his time with his other family.
Yeah.
He even says, like, at the end of the movie, final spoiler warning, he says at the end of the movie at her funeral, he says, like, I loved her. And there's just kind of like there's a clear tone that he shouldn't have been spending. I mean, even though so many good things come from him spending time with them, and there are bad things that come from that too, but like the whole plot of the movie comes from him spending so much time with their family. And so the fact that he was spending time with their family, like, we see it as a good thing, but it's also like, that's the whole reason that like his marriage was like most likely falling apart. And I mean, clearly there were some things there before, but like,
that was the final thing to push it over the edge.
It was the final straw. Yeah. And so I think it's okay to an extent, but there has to be communication. Like, they don't communicate. He's spending too much time with his family, even though it's fun, even though good things clearly come out of it. Like, he and his wife aren't doing what they need to do to mend their relationship, to make whatever's happening okay. And that's clearly where the lack of trust comes from. And I think the lack of trust is deserved. Neither of us are married, obviously, but if your spouse was going hanging out with a whole other family, like, all the time, you'd be like, what? No. Like,
yeah.
And that's totally logical.
Like, it's even like Big Fish, you know, like, I always suspected my dad was having an affair because he was always gone. And it's like, well, that sucks. But I mean, I understand from that perspective how you can think that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's still like very sad to have that thought of your father or your spouse, you know, like, you can't just be. It's almost like, why can't you be like your dad? Like, why can't you be optimistic enough to think, no, he genuinely just cares for these people, which some people do. I mean, you know, my brother, he had a tutor she died of cancer when he was like 13. And my mom would literally go to their house and make them dinners. She would make dinners for their family and stuff, and he would join them. And my mom did the same thing for another family friend and so on. And even my dad would do stuff for family friends when they were sick or incapable of things and all. And it's just sad, though, because, you know, obviously it wasn't the situation of my mom was going to a single father by herself, but that's what it was. Like, she was still caring for another person's family and was very, like, close to them. And sometimes be there for, like, 5 hours because they would be talking and stuff because, you know, mom's just... there's no off switch. But this is the same situation. Like, you just see, like, it started out just like, oh, he bumped into them at the park, and now he's invested. It's grown to the point where he just wants to care for them and help them because he sees a little bit of himself in them, especially Peter, because of his trials of losing a brother. Peter has lost a father, and he's trying to, like, relate to him and help him cope with it, which is very sad.
Yeah. Like you said, the park. I think the park is such a key aspect. And I think that, in a way, he should have stayed at the park. I think that what happens is that it goes from the park to their house to just, like, everywhere, all the time. He's always hanging out with his family. And, you know, like we've said, a lot of good things come out of that. And that's where the main plot of the movie comes from. That's where so much joy and happiness comes from, is creating these imaginative worlds with the kids that he's playing with. But I think that once he's had the conversation with his wife and she said, like, this is clearly, like, disrupting our marriage, this is clearly putting a roadblock, like, in our relationship, okay, then he should clearly back off, you know? And yeah. And I think that, I just think there's so many different ways around it that he could have figured out. His wife even talked about, like, I want you to be in one of your stories. Like, I don't know, like, bring your wife to come play with the kids too or something. Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of different ways. Or just keep going to the park. Just keep playing with the kids at the park and, like, let it stay at that. Like, and...
But what if he didn't?
If he didn't stay at the park?
Yeah, that's what we get.
Well, I know. It's such a hard question to answer.
Yeah, and I mean, like, if he did stay at the park, let's say he did, then those kids, their last moments with their mother would probably be pretty dull and, if anything, disconnected. Because one thing Peter literally says when he's, like, destroying his own playset, which is, it's the worst thing. When he's destroying the play that he made, he's like, I'm sick of lies. Like, I'm sick of adults lying. Tell me the truth. And James is telling the truth, but Peter doesn't believe him because he has trust issues. But then his mother comes in, and what does she do? She immediately lies. And that's why the moment she says all of this over a little chest pain, he pushes her away and runs off. So in all honesty, if he didn't come in, I think, if anything, the family would have been way more disconnected at their mother's death.
Yeah. I don't know. I typically think realistically, and so
yeah.
When I hear all that, I just think it's a lot of what ifs.
Yeah.
You know, and because we've seen the movie, because all the what ifs that we wanted to happen sort of play out, and we see that, again, a lot of good things come out of this, it's easy to think that, like, oh, that was the right option. But, like, the what ifs that we saw that actually came true, like, those are good. Like, that was the best course of action. But if you think through it logically, like, a lot of things that he did aren't things that we would probably do, or we would want our spouse to do, or even I don't know. It's such a hard question to answer, and there's a lot of what ifs, and so it's hard to answer. But I mean, clearly, we've seen the movie. It's good. It's emotional. It's happy. It's sad. There's a lot of up and downs. It's a fantastic movie. Highly recommend you see it. But yeah, there's a lot of questions that are hard to answer, like, logically, about what should actually happen.
Yeah, I do understand where you're coming from, too. And yeah, what ifs are completely hypothetical. It's like trying to break down a Marvel movie at this point. You can't. There's too many. It's its own rabbit hole. You can't argue with its logic anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just, it's so tough to say, oh, like, no, you shouldn't have gotten involved, because we saw the product of if he does. And if he does, it becomes something so much more beautiful.
Mm.
And one thing about that is, going into kind of the finale, up until the play comes out, for one, people around him are suspicious that he's sleeping with another woman. They think he's kind of burnt out on ideas because the last play was garbage, according to people. And the owner of the theater thinks he's a total sociopath because he's making this lucid story of pirates and Indians and them flying around in a place called Neverland.
Yep.
With a bunch of children.
Yeah.
And a light that's just reflected around the set called a fairy.
Yep.
But everyone else would have the same exact reaction. So why did they laugh? Why did they enjoy it and call it genius?
Because of the kids.
Exactly. Because if you were in that room by yourself watching this play, you would be weirded out. But those kids were there, and they broke that silence. And they said, no, this actually is funny, and these kids don't care what you think. Especially because they're little kids, they're orphans. They're like, I don't care what you think about me. This is funny, and I'm going to laugh. Whereas an adult, which the adults were, they were trying to keep their composure and be proper and take this seriously as art, you know, because they've read Shakespeare a million times. But when you have, like, a non-biased person come in, they break that norm and take it in as what it is. And what it is something so much more playful and enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really cool to look at and see, especially in, like, the boys as well. Because, you know, the oldest child, you know, is talking to James in the theater, and he goes, look at you. In the past 30 seconds, you have become a grown-up. And Peter's already been a grown-up, because Peter wants to be serious about everything. He sees real life as it is and nothing more. And then the other two boys are completely imaginative and just play around. And if anything, are kind of just side characters.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting to see that, like, range of how people perceive life and kind of how sad it is. Because again, Peter sees it as nothing but lies and being an adult and just trying to move on and show no emotion. The two boys see it as nothing but playing around and having fun and stuff. And the oldest brother is kind of that weird balance of, I want to have fun and I'm a kid, but things just keep getting worse and it's getting tougher and maybe I just need to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the adults, of course, in which, you know, Kate Winslet's character is unsure of what to do. The grandmother is a more stern soul.
Yes.
For nicer words.
Yes.
And then James is, no, keep the imagination. Childlike wonder. That's what keeps people. That's what keeps you unique.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's a lot, but...
No. I get it. I think... And we see this a lot in movies, also in the Bible, actually. Kids represent, like, the purest form of things. I mean, like, I think, I don't know why this scene came to mind, but, like, in, I think it's Attack of the Clones. In Attack of the Clones, the kids are talking with Master Yoda, and Obi-Wan's trying to figure out this problem. He doesn't know where Kamino's at, and some kid offers up a solution that's like a really simple solution, and Obi-Wan's like, oh, like whatever, like that's not right. And then Master Yoda looks at him and he's like, the kid's right. And he's like, oh. And so, and even in the Bible, I mean, it you see like Jesus loves little children, and like when they talk about like the best kind of faith, they talk like a childlike faith, right?
Yes.
And so there's so many representations of being like a kid is like the best kind of thing. And we even talk about that with such high praise, like in Big Fish, if you guys watch that. And even in here, we talk about the movie made me feel like a kid again. And it's like the purest form. It's innocent. It's enjoyable. It's great. It's fantastic. And that's how it feels when they go to, I mean, sort of maybe not Neverland at the very end, because that's kind of a sad scene. But but in all the other creations that they make, all the other plays that they come up with and things like that, that's what it feels like. And so I think that's why so many scenes feel so pure, feel so imaginative. And I think that's the answer to a couple of the questions that we've been asking, like, is this right? Is this wrong? And it's like, well, it definitely seems right to us, because when we see it through the eyes of the children, I mean, what more could you ask for, right? Like, it's so enjoyable. It's so fun. So, yeah, that's what I would probably say.
Yeah. I love that you brought up the Bible, too, because literally one of my favorite verses is when God is talking to his people and he literally says to them, in order to enter the gates of heaven, in order to enter my land, you must have a childlike wonder. Mm. That's what he says. And I love that verse, because I think that, especially to CMA students, that applies. You know, like when you grow up, you kind of lose that imagination. As CMA students, we have to keep that childlike wonder. That's how we make our stories, because we remember that magical, those magical adventures and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if we lose that, then... you know, our stories aren't going to be that interesting.
Yeah.
You know, nobody wants to see the story about the guy who went to a 9-to-5 job every day and did nothing.
Yeah.
That's pretty boring.
Yep.
But the guy who went to a 9-to-5 job and then looked out the window and imagined himself, you know, saving a child from a burning building, life of Walter Mitty, then it becomes a little more fun. Then it becomes interesting. Then you spice things up. That's one thing that's super cool. And I think this film visually, I mean, you're a cinematographer. I don't know how you felt visually, but I think it did that. Again, it kind of goes back to Big Fish. It kind of has that like kind of glow to it. A lot of strong changes from darker to brighter dynamics in to show like real life versus his imagination. But even like there's kind of a blend at times of them, I don't know, like the adults understanding the imagination, because there's the moment where James is in the theater and talking to the owner of the movie theater, or not movie theater, the like stage theater. And he goes up to the guy and he's like, but you did see it. And you kind of see the scene kind of get a little glowy. And I'm like, ooh. So he's saying the adults do see the imagination, but they won't acknowledge it. And that's when we, of course, get to the kids come to the play and it shows that like the adults can enjoy it more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very similar to Big Fish. I notice a big difference between what story it's telling. So in Big Fish, we talked a lot about Edward Bloom. Whenever he goes and he's telling some story from his past, very high color, very fun to look at, things are happening, when it goes back to his son, I think William Bloom, you see dark colors, things are bland, life's not interesting. And kind of the same way, I noticed it more in the locations of where he was at. Whenever he's talking with his wife or things aren't as interesting, like his own house is very, I mean, think about all the dinner scenes that they have, like where he's sitting at the table, so bland, so dark, so like just completely like, I mean, even their outfits, completely void of life. That's how it felt whenever he's in his own house. But then when he's at the park, when he's in their backyard, when, I mean, even Neverland at the very end, like there's so many, I mean, the set design was like really good. And the scenes and the shots and the colors, like they all tell a story that lines up with where he's at, what he's doing, what's going on. I mean, the emotions of the characters, everything ties in very nicely. And I think they did a really, really good job on it.
Another thing too, that I'm not a big person on music, like forcing emotion. But this film, I think, did really well with its score.
Mm.
And I think with, like, a lot of the scenes where it got really, like, intense or really emotional, the music very much pushed me over the edge.
Yes.
We were literally just talking after we finished it. We were like, oh, man, I cried. The music very much, like, floods you. And, again, sometimes there's times in, like, films where it feels forced of, like, hey, feel this way.
Yeah.
Especially with music, I think, because, you know, they always have to, like, bring out a very sad violin and so on, and it echoes, too, or, like, gives, like, a vibration. But here, it was still, I think, enough in the background to where it just kind of, like, lingered in the back of our heads to just, like, again, it's that little nudge. Like, we're already there because of the acting in the moment, you know, Peter and him on the bench at the very end. But then the music comes, like, kind of just, like, slowly floods in and just pushes you over, and you're like, okay, I can't take this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like you said, when the wife sees Neverland, I think that's such a cool scene, because up until that point, no one really interacts with his imaginations, except for, like, the boys when they're doing the shootout and stuff, but that's because they're kids.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas once Mary sees, or no, not Mary, sorry, Kate Winslet's character, I want to say it's, like, Sophia or something.
I don't know her name.
But once she sees Neverland, that's, like, the first time, like, someone's, like, fully introduced and enveloped into his world.
Hmm.
And that's really such a cool scene.
Yeah.
And so sad, because it's also, I think, the moment where, oh, this is her passing on. Because, yeah, again, like, there's the fade out, or the, like, fade to her, and it fades out. Mm-hmm. And then it goes to the funeral.
Yeah.
And it's that moment of, all these kids are out, they've already seen the play, they're enjoying it, and she's finally, like, moving on to Neverland, because he told her earlier on in the story, my brother's in Neverland, that's where I see him. And so this is now her going on and, like, staying there.
Yeah. And the music too, like you were saying, just pushes you over the edge. Like even to speak on that a little bit more, like, I don't know if you know this, but originally when I wanted to go to Biola, I wanted to go for music composition.
Oh.
I love movie soundtracks.
Okay.
I listen to them all the time in my spare time. And so I loved this score, because it felt so minimal that I think halfway through the movie I went, wait, has there been a score this whole time? And then I listened, and then I heard, like, very faint music in the background. I was like, oh, I guess there has been. And it wasn't like it felt like it was missing it. It just felt like it tied in so well. And then when there was a scene of heightened emotion, like you were saying, something big happens, and then right when your mind goes, oh my gosh, like, what's happening? Then the score comes out of nowhere, and you're like, ah. And it's just, it's beautiful. Like, that's how it felt. Like, it's sad, but it's beautiful. And I think those are some of my favorite stories, even though they make me sad.
Yeah, I know. Twice now I've made you cry. I've cried too, but twice now I've, like, picked films that are super imaginative, childlike, and then at the end it's like, oh, by the way, real life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
but I love these kind of movies, man. They're so much fun to watch. It just feels like it's not a genre that I've seen a lot of, and so it seems like every time I watch one, if it's a new story, like, I'm there, I'm glued to my seat, I'm ready to watch it. And that's how it feels the whole time you watch the movie. You're there, you can't wait to see what happens next, you're super excited, something's gonna happen, something bad's gonna happen, you don't want to watch it happen, but it's gonna happen regardless, and you're gonna get through it, and then something better's gonna happen later. And that's how this whole movie felt. And at the end of it, you know, when it puts up the blinding white screen at the very end and it says the end, you're like, oh man, like,
yeah,
such a good story. So
yeah, and no one experiences that full range more than Peter. It's very interesting seeing Peter off the bat. He almost reluctantly laughs. You know, it. You can tell he's very much trying to stay refrained because he's so untrusting of adults, especially anybody who's like any father figure. Because, like they said, you know, he was told, oh, like my mom said he was gonna be planning a fishing trip, so I planned everything for us and I was ready to go. And what happened? She lied to me. And so it's very tough seeing Peter, especially just like right off the bat, just be like this most amazing kid that you feel like, oh, like this kid has like these beautiful blue eyes and looks like he's like, you know, just a ball to be with. And then the moment he speaks, he's like, that's not a bear though. It's a dog.
Yeah.
Like there's no imagination to this.
Yep.
Well, hold up. You have three brothers who are like, literally talking about like one brother's locked in the cage because the prince won't let him and stuff, you know, like they're having a ball, like doing this imagination all, and you can't even give the simple imagination of the dog who's huge being a bear. Like what happened to you? Why are you so like, why are you so in, like let someone in your world, Peter.
Yeah. He's so fenced off. Like when they're playing Cowboys and Indians.
Yeah.
And, okay, what is Johnny Depp's character called? I keep referring to him as Johnny Depp, but I don't know.
James.
Okay, yeah. That's it. All right.
I've said it a couple times.
No, I was trying to think of his last name, but I can't. All right, anyway. So when James tells him, he's like, you're like my Indian son or whatever. Like, I'm adopting you. And then he just looks at him and he's like, you're not my father. And then he like runs off and you're like, whoa, my bad. Yeah. Like, what just happened?
I know. It's like he can't take it. No, I'm not going to. No, that's not okay with me. It's like, but we're imagining. He's like, no, I don't want to.
Yeah.
Especially something like that. And that really sucks, though. And it's also, again, like that moment of it's always the wrong timing, right? You know, with the affair and all, there was the wrong timing of, you know, he said like, oh, I tried to let you into my world. And it's like, well, it was too late because when I wanted in, you wouldn't let me in and stuff. And so with Peter, it's, well, once he's encouraged to be imaginative and all, his mom gets sick and he's like, well, no, reality still hurts. This isn't saving me from reality. Reality still hurts. This is just distracting me from it. And I don't want the lies anymore. Imagination is a lie. So why do I want more lies? And that sucks to see because, again, it's just that bad timing of it all. If she didn't get sick, or even if she was already sick when Johnny Depp came in and tried to lighten the mood, maybe it'd be easier to like get him to open up more. But no, because she like had to do it around when he's like finally there. He's finally ready to write down this stuff and actually give it a try. Something bad has to bring him down, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it reminds me of, I don't know if you've seen it, but the original Music Man movie. I don't know if you've ever seen
not.
It. But Ron Howard plays a character, like a little kid. He played Opie in the Andy Griffith Show, if you've ever seen that.
I've seen a bit of it.
Okay, and he has this big lisp, and he doesn't ever talk to anybody. And finally, the music man, the music teacher comes to town. He inspires him, like he's having fun, and finally he starts talking to people. And then like a later on scene in the movie, he finds out that what this music teacher has been promising him isn't actually going to come true, and it's like everything falls apart around him. And I couldn't stop thinking about that in the movie. Like it feels very similar, where he's being inspired, finally he writes his own play, and you're like, yes, like let's watch it. And I actually remembered it from the first time I watched it. I went, oh no, it's the play scene. And I got really sad because I remember what happened. And like you said, he gets all this hope. It's so exciting. And then like it all comes crashing down. And initially he's actually fine. It's like, oh, well, the play didn't work out. Like we can just do it later. But then again, like when he finds out that they're lying to him, or he thinks that they're lying to him, but they actually aren't. I mean, his mom does later. You just see everything like crumble, like everything that's been building up over this whole time. It's like, oh, and we're back at square one. And that's how it feels. So I think the character development in this movie is actually really good, because it takes characters and turns them the opposite of what they are for good. And he's not imaginative. At the end, he's imaginative. His brother's maybe too imaginative, but I mean, you really can't be too imaginative. And it turns them, and it shows them a little bit more of what life's really like. And I think that the character development in this movie, I was very impressed with it.
Yeah. And the thing is, kind of going back to it, I relate with that because I definitely remember moments in my life, especially being around brothers that are super athletic and active and outdoorsy, and my mom, who's a total tomboy and goes outdoors and stuff. I remember those times where I'd be like, I want to go out with them and all. And like things would get good and good and good, and I'd get to go out more and have fun more. And then I'd have an asthma attack and be in the ER for overnight.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yikes.
And then reality would hit me, and I'd be like, this, like, I'd be Peter's situation. I'd be like, this sucks. Like, I don't get to do anything. I'm just in a little bubble.
Hmm.
And so I definitely understand that feeling of, like, everything feels so good, and the moment reality crashes on you, you just completely fall into shambles because you feel like it was all pointless, or it all just, it's not going to go any further, right? Like, mm-hmm. There's only so much that can happen before reality hits again.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's so emotional and so hard to watch, because I'm trying to find a situation which I can relate to, and I can't think of one right now, but I, like, the overall scene, like, the overall idea is a very relatable idea. Like, we've worked hard for something, we've gotten to the point, right when we're ready to show, like, what's happened, like, everything falls apart.
Yeah.
and it's so relatable, and so it's hard to watch from Peter's perspective, knowing what it feels like to be him, and it's hard to watch from an outside perspective, knowing what it's like to encourage someone to go and step out of their bubble and then, you know, to have it pop.
Yeah. And then it comes up to the funeral. Oh. Or just the play as a whole, which we talked about, like, in bits and pieces, but talking about it as a whole is a whole other beast.
Yeah.
Because it's just so much to take in. Mm-hmm. Again, it gives me that Life of Walter Mitty feel, even though this movie came out first, but have you seen it before?
I saw it in theaters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Life of Walter Mitty, it's all about his imagination, what he wants to be, and then he finally does it. And so the entire story, it's like what he imagines, this is Neverland, and what, like, they want, also Big Fish, like, how we want the ending to go. We keep seeing bits and pieces, we keep, like, seeing a bit of this world and waiting for it to happen, and we finally get that final bit where she sees Neverland, the promise is fulfilled, we get the ending we wanted, it's just how the glass eye saw it, and it's so heartwarming, but also, again, so painful, because you see, like, Peter wrote down the entire play already, he's seen it as it is, he's fallen in love with it, and as they were talking about in the play, it's like, it's super cool to see Peter and James talk after the play, and Peter's like, I'm not Peter Pan, and everyone's like, huh? And even, like, I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, but he used you. He literally asked for your name.
But your name's Peter.
Yeah. Exactly. No, this is Patrick. But then he goes, he's Peter Pan, and points to James. And it's like, wait, is this a blatant, like, explaining the moral moment? Like, am I missing something? And rewatching, I'm like, wait, yeah, he's Peter Pan. That's weird to think about. Because, again, it's that, like, throw off of, this is all building up of Peter's arc, but the play is James's arc. At home is Peter's arc, in which that's when it's the park bench.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, James is the one showing up. He's the one inspiring the kids. He's the one taking them to all these faraway places, just like Peter Pan.
Yeah, and the moment in between where Kate Winslet's character gets to see Neverland, which we're talking about, that's the transition to finish both arcs, or to connect them both, which I think is super cool.
Yeah, and man, that scene is so heart-wrenching. Because if you guys haven't seen the movie, and again, we recommend it, but in the scene, they're sitting on the couch, they're watching the play, and then, I don't know, like, the wall lifts up or something. I don't even know.
Yeah, the back wall lifts up to the backyard, and the backyard is completely stylized, like, it's Neverland. Like, and you got, like, the mermaid straightforward, people dressed as fairies, like, jumping around through the bushes. Mm-hmm. The pirates are in, like, the right-hand side, like, in the fog. The Indians are on the left side, like, joining the mermaids.
Yep. It's like a total, like, fantasy forest.
Yeah, and Kate Winslet, like, all of them get up from the couch and walk to the edge of, like, the back patio. But Kate Winslet's character walks out into the grass, and then it fades to black, essentially saying, she's gone to Neverland, she's passed away.
Yeah.
Which, again, oh, that is one of the greatest death scenes any movie could do.
It's so fantastic. And I forgot that it transitioned right from that to the funeral.
Yeah, it's so hard cut. It's not even a hard cut, but it feels like it.
I know, yeah. Well, it fades up from black, and it doesn't even just fade to the funeral, it fades out from black and it's in black and white, and then it fades back to color as well. And
yeah,
so everything's like so like dismal and like sad. And I sat there and I looked over at you at the theater. I was just like, what? And I was like holding my head. I was like,
yeah.
No. I was like, I forgot. And dude, it's so sad. And I mean, when you watch her walking in Neverland, like, you understand, like, she's gonna die. But when you're faced with the actual reality, like, now she's dead. Like, now the kids are grieving like they were before for their dad. It almost feels like now we're back at square one. But the difference is, like, James is there. He's taught them all these things. Like, he's gonna stay with them. And that's, like, the biggest promise that he gives to Peter. And
yeah.
And then, I mean, there's this scene at the park bench where he even talks to Peter and he says, like, hey, like, your mom, like, she inspired your imagination. Like, your writing, like, she lives on in that. And then, I mean, there's the whole idea of, like, and we see this all throughout the movie of, like, this can be true if you believe. And that's such a big aspect, is the whole, if you truly believe it, then, like, it can be real. And so he says, like, hey, like, you can still, like, talk to your mom. Like, you're still influenced by your mom. Like, you can see her and be with her, like, if you believe. And I mean, it sounds a little cheesy now that I'm talking about it, but, like, in the movie, like, it totally fits. And it's just like,
no, it does.
It's super reassuring, and it feels so much different how they're grieving now than how we saw Peter at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. Just know this now, cliche and cheesy isn't bad. It
yes.
means it's a system or moral that works and is true.
Yeah.
It's just been used a lot because everyone knows it works and it's true.
That's a good point.
So just know that. In that park bench scene, it's that match cut to the beginning. It's that full circle moment of, mm-hmm. hey, here we are again, but now things have changed. I will be your father now, and you do have the tools. Whereas at the beginning, you didn't have a father, and you didn't have that imagination. But now he's saying to him, like, just believe. That's all it takes, Peter. Just believe, and she's still here. And as Christians, like, everyone has different beliefs of, like, you know, feeling the presence of lost ones and stuff. But there's even, like, I saw this once. There's in Carpool Karaoke, stick with me, Paul McCartney is with James Corden, and James Corden tells a story of his grandfather and his, and I think his dad. And he says, man, I wish my grandfather was here to see this. He would get a, like, kick out of this, because he's the one who introduced me to the Beatles. Paul McCartney says, he is here. He says that. He's like, he is still here. And, like, he starts tearing up. And it's that moment. It's like, if you believe they're here, if you still, like, carry on what they taught you, they are still here with you.
Hmm.
And then he says it. And then Peter truly believes it, because he says, without even, like, without James asking him to try in that moment, without him saying, like, you know, like, try it now or whatever, Peter looks off, like, past him, and sees his mother and go, like, you know, you don't see her in shot, but he goes, I can see her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so heart-wrenching, but so beautiful, because you finally see him start to accept reality in a better lens.
Mm. Yeah, it's so powerful, because it shows that he's moved on.
Yeah.
And that's, like, again, the character development. Like you said, full circle. Like, we see the full, complete pattern, and when he delivers that line, it's like, all right. Like, now, even though he's built up, he's broken down, now we're at this point, we've finally made progress. Now we can finally see it. He's grown, he's moved on. I mean, not moved on from his mother's death, but, like, he has moved to a place now where he's better than he was before, and this isn't a foundation that can just be crumbled away like the other ones were. And I think that is a really meaningful ending to the story, because it fades and says the end right after that.
Yeah.
And it's sad, but it is really, really powerful. And I think that's probably my favorite scene in the movie. And I think we've talked about this before, but the ending is satisfying, not because it's happy, not because it's sad, not because whatever, but it wraps things up. And we understand where the characters are at. We understand where they've been and where they're going from now on. We, like, the future's been set up as well. We know that James is now the father. They're now, like, his children. And we've seen that he's capable, he's proved himself, and that these kids are now going in a better direction than they were before. They're not going to be, I mean, we can't just say they're not going to be weighed down by the death of the father or anything. Like traumatic things have happened. But like I said, they're now in a better spot than they were before, which feels really satisfying as an ending.
I think that's a great way to wrap it up. Like, I don't really have any other thoughts after that, because at this point my mind is just sad. In a good way, in a happy way, but yeah, it's just tough to like handle that film sometimes.
Yeah, definitely go watch it if you guys listen through and haven't seen it. It's a fantastic movie. Came out in 2004, which I think was a year after Big Fish. It feels very similar. Great story.
Great story. Before we close, I've gotten a YouTube channel up. I'm going to edit, hopefully get the episode 1 on YouTube this weekend, and I'm going to start editing episode 2. If you guys don't already know, we have an Instagram page, Pretentious Favorites, and I'm also going to give a shout out to on-campus video game designer. Justin Balsba is working on a game and currently streaming it. I want to make sure I get the name right. Tiny Trees. So Tiny Tree Studios is the game name, and also on Instagram. Please check it out. I'm going to be streaming. I'm going to try streaming like on YouTube and stuff. I'll probably post that on something. Are you working on any projects right now you'd like to shout out? Any projects or anything?
I know there's a project being edited right now. It's not going to be done till April, so I'll probably wait till a later podcast to fully shout it out.
But all good.
That's the only thing right now.
All right. I think I give this film, I'm going to say 3.5 stars.
3.5 out of 5?
Yeah.
I would say a solid 4 out of 5.
You give it a 4 out of 5?
I would say 4 out of 5.
All right. And that is all. I hope everyone has a great night.